This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may dwell in the world. And, of course, this program, I think, is valuable to all peoples of the world who love freedom and love the idea of preserving their own heritage, because we here at DavidDuke.com, WhiteCivilRights.com, Stormfront.org, believe in the idea that all people have the right to preserve their heritage, their way of life, that we do not want or need globalism, that globalism will crush freedom as easily as a bulldozer crushes a flower, that globalism will destroy the individual character and nature of all peoples, all nations, all languages, all cultures, and we truly love the diversity of this planet, and we love most especially our own diversity, the diversity that is Western civilization and culture. This particular brand, this unique expression of mankind, which we so care about and so revere and so love, and we're determined to preserve that. I just got off the telephone. I mean, literally 30 seconds ago, I got off the telephone with a reporter from Waterbury, Connecticut, from the Republican, I think it's called the Republic American, which is one of the newspapers in Waterbury, Connecticut. It was a reporter. And the reporter was calling me because there has been an uproar because Euro, which is the European Unity and Rights Organization, European American Unity and Rights Organization, was passing out materials to the people up there, a leaflet called White People Wake Up, which is dealing with the immigration issue, the affirmative action issue, other issues of vital importance to the people. Well, it seems these leaflets, just these leaflets which have gone to people's homes, just as you would distribute literature anywhere. I mean, this is the last frontier. You know, most shopping centers, you can't even put material on people's cars anymore, had elicited a lot of complaints, or at least a few complaints, from some residents who immediately called the police and demanded that our people distributing this material were arrested. They're trying to find some way to stop this material from going out. They're trying to say, well, this is littering, or this is racism, therefore it shouldn't be allowed. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I've got news for the people in Waterbury, Connecticut. There is something we have in the United States of America called freedom of speech. It's the most important freedom that any people can have. It's the basis of all other freedoms, because without freedom of speech, you can't even know what the government might do in terms of taking away your other freedoms. And it's just amazing, ladies and gentlemen, that we have come to the point in this country where the police have to investigate a leaflet being distributed that's defending the European-American majority. So the reporter asked me, you know, what's your take on this? Are you familiar with these leaflets? I said, I don't know of the specific leaflet involved, but I can tell you this, that I'm very much in favor of the fact that our people are up there distributing material, that our members are out there trying to have great outreach to the public, and they are exercising their constitutional rights and liberty. And it's amazing to me that these people who are demanding these people that the police arrest our activists, are the people distributing this literature, that they are absolutely insane hypocrites. I told the reporter, I said, you know, we have 99,000 hours of the other side of the multicultural issue, the liberal side of the multicultural issue, which is broadcast on television programs, documentaries. It's a theme in movies. It's a theme in docudramas. It's a theme in entertainment productions. It's a theme in thousands of newspaper articles. It's a theme in thousands of books. It's a theme in thousands of textbooks for schools. I mean, we can go on and on and on. What are these people afraid of? An 8.5 by 11 inch of paper with some ideas on it. My God, we certainly can't permit that, can we, ladies and gentlemen? That is a real danger. Oh, my God. It's just amazing. Amazing, ladies and gentlemen, the hypocrisy that's going on. And the fact that these individuals would try to intimidate our people who are distributing this literature, threaten them, or go to the police about it, that's what you call, in the parlance of the liberal pro-race-mixing establishment in this country, that's what you call, quote, conspiracy to violate someone's civil rights. And the idea of trying to find some sort of statute like, oh, this is littering, or this is some sort of a nuisance statute or trespassing statute, if someone puts a leaflet on someone's doorstep, that is absolutely a conspiracy to violate the civil rights of the individual expressing their freedom of speech. And the truth is, those are the people that should be prosecuted. I pointed out to the reporter that it's amazing, you know, I guess I'm accused of being the most closed-minded, bigoted person in the world. I mean, my name is almost synonymous with what bigotry is. You know what bigotry is? Bigotry is being fixated on an idea and not having an open mind. Bigotry is not being willing to hear the other side and to judge an idea freely. And, you know, I'm always accused of being a bigoted, but I always point out to these people that, you know, I've never tried to suppress the freedom of speech of the people I disagree with. On the contrary, in fact, at LSU, for a while, I served on the entertainment committee, the student entertainment committee. And at LSU, we had some right-wing speakers come, and we also had some very left-wing speakers come. And I had no objection to the left-wing speakers coming, as long as right-wing speakers could come as well, as long as we had a true diversity of opinion on the college campus. So I even approved liberal speakers coming the same way that I advanced, you know, different speakers of the non-liberal persuasion. The ironic thing is the same people that accuse me of being a bigot, the same people that accuse me of trying to suppress other opinions or being closed-minded, you know, they themselves are far more bigoted than my record shows. Because I've always been willing to hear and entertain, and in fact, read other points of view. And in fact, I have made it a point in my life to read other points of view. That's where Jewish supremacism came from, my book, Jewish Supremacism. And really, my view on the race issue today, it came because I was willing to read different points of view. That I wanted to know the truth. I was not afraid of an idea. You know, when we get to the point, ladies and gentlemen, that we're afraid to read a book or a pamphlet or an idea because it may challenge our cherished beliefs, we better start examining those cherished beliefs again. We can't have fear in that manner. You know, we've got to have an open inquiry on every point of view if we're ever going to arrive at the truth. I fully admit that I may be wrong. I fully admit that I could be wrong about any of my subjects that I discuss here in this radio or that I write about. But the way to show me that I'm wrong is to show where I'm wrong and why I'm wrong, and not simply to try to stop people from distributing material that I've written to individual citizens in Waterbury, Connecticut, or anywhere else in this country or on the earth. The idea, and this show maybe today is more about freedom of speech, and by the way, you can send in your comments to me, and I'd like to hear your ideas and issues. You can write to me directly and very quickly at info1@davidduke.com. I'll be checking that email address throughout this program. That's info1@davidduke.com, and also you can stormfront post. You can post on the town hall section of stormfront.org. Just go to stormfront.org and go to the town hall section, which is the link on the top of every Stormfront page. Go there and post. Let me see your questions. And you can share your ideas not only with me, but you can also share your ideas with all the readers on that thread. And by the way, there have been over 500,000 readers and growing all the time on that thread as well as already. So we're reaching a lot of people. And I think that listeners and the activists who are listening are making that possible, because you're really getting out there. When these programs are over, you listen to the archive program. And this is, by the way, live. It isn't amazing. This is live all over the world. At this moment, people in China are listening to this right now, in Australia, in New Zealand, in India, in the Middle East, in Finland, for that matter, in somewhere in Siberia and Russia, in southern Italy, in parts of Spain, in Brazil. We just had all over the world, and people are listening to this absolutely live and as clear as a bell. What a fantastic technology. So now that we have this tremendous force, we've got to use it, and we've got to reach more and more people out there around the world. And I hope that you're excited as I am about the possibilities we have to wake up our people. I think it's amazing to me, and it's shocking to me, and I hope that new people listening to this broadcast today will begin to get it into their heads that we have lost our freedom in the West in many ways. In America, you've distributed a leaflet expressing your viewpoint, and you're threatened by the police, and they look for ways to arrest you, and they try to intimidate you. In other countries, it's even worse. In Canada, they put you in prison. In England, they put you in prison. In France, they put you in prison. In Sweden, they put you in prison. In Germany, they put you in prison. In Spain, they attempt to put you in prison for simply speaking out honestly about the issues that you believe in your heart. Freedom of speech, freedom of conscience, isn't that the most important and the most basic human rights? And you know, it's funny, but the ideas that we're talking about here and the principles, the freedom of speech we're exercising is about another fundamental right. And we can't even speak about this fundamental right anymore in some cases without facing prison ourselves. And that's the fundamental right of every people to control their own affairs, to be free, and not have any sort of foreign or alien influence control what they see or hear in terms of the control of their media, what they have in terms of their government policies. As you know, the Jewish supremacists dominate American foreign policy, British foreign policy, and many, many nations today, and they certainly dominate the media of most of the so-called West. And America, of course, is the greatest source of the output of movies and documentaries and propaganda around the world, and even articles for magazines and newspapers. And who controls that in this country? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think you know who controls that. You know, we've talked about that a lot. I just, in fact, read an article, or I saw an article from Chicago, and I think I have to dig that article up before the end of my program, because it's so indicative of what's happening in this country. Let me see if I can find that for you. In fact, I'm gonna take a look around for that piece while I'm on the air. It's kind of hard doing that while I'm actually handling the board and handling this program. But it's just really amazing. Let me see if I can find that real quickly, if you'll give me a little bit of a pause, because I just want to see if I can get that together, because that really is an amazing issue. And I've got that close somewhere. Now, where do they see that? Anyway, I got an article from the Chicago Tribune. And the article was dealing with some subject, and the writers, it looked like a Jewish bar mitzvah of their Washington bureau. You know, it was incredible. And I felt like, is this an Israeli paper? Or is this one of the leading papers in the United States, the Chicago Tribune? And they listed the name of the article, the authors. And I'm going to find this for you. But it's just like we're in a foreign country. Well, if you even just say an objection to this, if you say, my God, don't you think our media should reflect our own people? Don't you think it should be of our own people? you know, of our own values, of our own culture, of our own heritage. That why should people within a certain agenda, I mean, the people that we're talking about here, these Jewish supremacists, they are the closest knit tribal entity on this planet. They work for each other. They have an absolute agenda. Not all of them, of course. And I'm not going to be so ridiculous as to think that all Jews are the same, or all Jews are working against Western civilization, or working for Israel. There are even some anti-Israeli Jews. There's some anti-Jewish supremacist Jews, like Israel Shahak, to whom I dedicated my book, Jewish Supremacism. But there's no question about the fact that there are no people on this planet. There's no people who are more dedicated to their ideas and issues, rather more than the Jewish people. The Jewish people stand up together. They're dedicated. They are part of that agenda. And certainly, when they have certain positions of control and influence in media, they influence the way those issues are reported to people. That's just a reality of life. I mean, that's just something you really can't deny because it exists. I mean, it should be clear to anyone. And so nowadays, if you absolutely just simply protest, you know, against this foreign domination of our media, would people protest if followers of Saddam Hussein controlled our media outlets, controlled our major newspapers, controlled our television news broadcasting? Well, I think, of course, they would. Would people complain if Islamic fundamentalists who hated Israel controlled all of our news media? Oh, man, would they complain? I mean, I think Congress would pass special legislation against that. Well, then why in the world don't we have any objection to the Jewish extremists and the people who endorse Jewish extremism who control so much of our media, people like Mortimer Zuckerman of U.S. News and World Report, and the ilk of people like Paul Wolfowitz, an extreme Jewish supremacist who's now head of our World Bank, without a bit of protest. And the truth is, it would be very similar right now in the world to promoting, you know, a Nazi to head of the World Bank. That's right, a Nazi. You know, and if you had a current national socialist state in Germany, which of course you don't, but if you did, it's promoting a Nazi head of the World Bank. You think that would fly? Well, let me tell you, anybody who supports Israel, you know, they are Judeo-Nazis, you know, and the only difference between them and the national socialists is that the national socialists were pretty much honest about it. And the Judeo-Nazis try to pretend that they're purveyors of egalitarianism, when in reality they have one of the world's most virulent, you know, supremacist states. That's the real difference. And so that is a fundamental difference between the two of them. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, you have Ernst Zindel right now sitting in prison in Germany. Sitting in prison in Germany. He was living in Canada for decades. He is married to and was living in the United States of America with his wife. He is an artist in his home in Tennessee when he was arrested for a supposed immigration violation. Really, technicality. Again, he's married to an American citizen, and there's no reason to think that marriage is fraudulent or any problem with it. He was apprehended by the government like a SWAT team. He was held in solitary confinement for over 2 years. In absolutely horrendous conditions, held and tried in Canada. And here's this man who's a pacifist, who's never had any association with violence. In fact, the man's been a victim of Jewish and radical racist and communist violence for years in Canada. His home, in fact, and studio was burned down. He's been verbally, and not only verbally, but physically attacked by Jewish supremacists in Canada. And he was tried on some sort of violation or a threat to Canadian security, and they wouldn't even give the evidence against him, ladies and gentlemen. He didn't even have the right to hear the evidence against him in trial. These are the fundamental rights that America was founded upon and Western civilization is supposed to be based upon. that if someone wants to charge you with an offense or for doing a crime, that they've got to tell you what you did, and they've got to expose the evidence. Every man, the fundamental principle of human rights in terms of being charged with criminal actions is the right to confront your accuser, the right to know what they're saying you did and why they say you did, and seeing the evidence against you. And guess what? Ernst Sundell didn't even have that right. And then he was shipped back to Germany, where now he's in prison facing charges of some sort of arcane charge of encouraging racial hatred against the group or something. And for what? For what reason? What is the basis of this hate charge that he's under now? Because he refutes certain historical aspects of the Second World War, a war that ended now 60 years ago, an historical event. And here's a man who can't even express his opinion, his conscience, his thoughts, his ideas about that war. That's supposed to be democracy. That's supposed to be freedom. Wake up, ladies and gentlemen, and they'll be coming to take your freedom very soon, too, if they can take Ernst Sundell and they can raise such a ruckus in Connecticut with what's happening there. You know, they're going to be coming to take your freedom, you know, very, very soon as well. So wake up, everybody. The time has come. The time has come to really stand up and to defend our own rights and our own heritage and our basic individual freedoms, culture, values. And it's just amazing. And I just wonder, who are these people? Who are these people in Waterbury, Connecticut, that are saying that that someone cannot distribute an 8.5 by 11 inch little flyer, you know, on these subjects? It's just amazing. And it continues. It just continues every day, and it's a wearisome fight sometimes. It's such a difficult fight. It's unfathomable sometimes. Some of the leaders that have to go through what they've got to go through for so long in this struggle, it's tiresome, but it's just so necessary. It's so vital, because unless we start to stand up and defend our people soon, we're just absolutely going to. We're going to lose everything. I'm going to quote from David Fellows. This is from a post today in Stormfront. He says, free Zundel now, obviously. And he says, thanks for the link. It's a great video talking about the video of why do some people dislike Jews. And he says, one of the biggest reasons why there are bad feelings toward Jews is their ability to economically rise to the top in any society. Naturally, this acquisition of a disproportionate portion of a country's wealth is resented by the host population is considered unfair and unjust, though such feelings are often falsely labeled as envy. Consider, for example, the Jews who fled mainland Europe for the UK or America in the 1930s or 40s. Many arrived with just a suitcase, yet many of these same refugees would go on to amass a great deal of money, live in nice houses, and retire in relative luxury. So how is this achieved? Some certainly sent their cash to Swiss banks out of the reach of the Nazis and drew in those accounts from the UK or US, but many simply prospered from Jewish gold. Now, Jewish gold, in quotation marks, is not the sort you will find in the ground or in shops, but it's just valuable. It refers to the tribal nature of the Jews and their determination to help each other and favor fellow Jews rather than the members of the host population. In business, Jews will often work together to overcome Gentile competitors or replace a Gentile with a Jew. I personally know of instances where a long-established and talented Gentile was suddenly replaced when a Jew with similar skills turns up. During the Second World War, many Jews in England became rich through their operations in the black market. While Gentiles went into battle, many Jews were making a killing of a different sort back at home in the UK. I've talked to a number of these Jewish refugees, and it's clear many have done well for themselves. Most retire on a good income and can split their time between two homes. Winters are never spent in the North, but in Florida, USA, and Mallorca, Spain, for example. After the war, many in the UK entered the rag trade, clothing, or took up property speculation, but more recently they have had competition in these areas from new immigrants. Indians from East Africa or India presented UK Jews with a bit of completion, just at the point when the Jewish Nazi refugees began to think of retirement. These Indians prospered with their connections to cheap labor and goods back home. Many from East Africa came in with money and experience in business and property development. India and Pakistani immigrants began to control the small retail corner shop market in many areas of the UK, together with wholesalers who supplied them. I know of an Irish lady who was driven out of her corner shop business because she got less favorable deals from the Indian-owned wholesalers. However, it seems the Jews are getting the upper hand again by way of their Tesco supermarket company. Tesco was started after the war by an East End working class area of London Jew. It has since become the UK's biggest supermarket chain. They have recently moved into the high street and corner shop market and have frequently entered into partnership with the Indian and Pakistani shopkeepers. The new stores trade under the Tesco name but are staffed by Indians. It's a partnership, but it's clear Tesco have the upper hand. Interesting, and I talk about this at great length in my book Jewish Supremacism, and I hope that you read those chapters on the origins of anti-Semitism. I discuss this very much so. I mean, you know, the Jewish people have been taught this incredible sense of solidarity and unity and togetherness. And that in itself is not a bad thing at all. You know, I think that every people need that kind of feeling. But while they do this, they preach to us the exact opposite, this atomizing of our people, that we're just all individuals, that there's no group loyalty needed or wanted or necessary or proper. I've heard it so many times. A typical example is I saw a television program once, and some person said, "I'm proud of my heritage." You know, this is a white person. And the little Jewish interloper, this Jewish refuter, says, "Why should you be proud of anything? You're not responsible for your heritage. You were just born. You didn't do anything to be responsible for, you know, to have any link to George Washington just because you were born." You know, it's like, well, okay, you know, think about it the other way around, ladies and gentlemen. Imagine if a Jew stood up and said, "Yes, I'm very proud of my Jewish heritage, and I want to preserve it." And some Gentile said, "You're nothing to be proud of. You're not responsible for your heritage. You were just born. You didn't determine whether you were born or not by a Jew." But that's just typical of what goes on, this tremendous double standard. How many Holocaust movies have been made, or that kind of theme been made? How many plays, how many magazine articles, how many newspaper articles, how many celebrations, how many documentaries? And Jews are taught just repeatedly, incessantly, chronically about how the Gentiles have tried to kill them. Well, what happens to those Jews as they begin to go forward in the world, in business, in education, in whatever area of life? And many Jews are smart. They're very intelligent. You know, I don't think they're greatly more intelligent than white people or anything like that. If you look at the greatest achievements of Western science and history, I mean, the Europeans are certainly overwhelmingly at the top of almost every category. But what is it? Well, okay, let's say that a Jewish person, you know, rises in a particular school. He's a good teacher. He gets into the administration. He becomes a principal, and he is responsible then for the hiring of his not only for teachers but say of assistants to himself in terms of the administration to promote that teacher to the administrative level. Do you see why he may certainly favor one of his own over one of the Gentiles? He's taught to do that from the time he was born. Well, you take that process and you just keep going with that process over a period of 15 or 20 or 30 or 40 years in that institution, and you see where that institution is 30 years from now. You take a company. Let's take a board of directors, XYZ company, and let's say you have a couple of Jews on that company, a couple of Jews in position. And they're not president. They didn't found the company, but they've come in. They've gotten into the company. They've done well, and they've risen in the ranks of the company. And somebody gets in the control of, say, the controller, or someone gets in control of hiring, new acquisitions, evaluating personnel. Who are they going to favor? And if there's two members of that, let's say two members of an 11-man board, you know, they've already got a block of two. That's not that many, but they got a block of two. They can try to influence other board members for one of their fellow Jews. Then pretty soon they may have three, and then three goes to four. Then four maybe goes to six or seven. And pretty soon, guess what? They've got control over the company. What do you think has happened to companies like Walt Disney? Here's this great majority of filmmakers that made such great movies for the American people. And these movies were movies that celebrated the values, the heritage, the traditions, the beauty of our people, the beauty of our heritage. And they just quietly moved in, step by step by step, favoring one another until they became dominant. This kind of process goes on at every level. Let's say you have a Jewish individual who's has an important position with IBM. Say he's dealing with the letting of contracts that IBM lets, okay, to people. And you have a number of firms who are going to make computer cases. I've used this analogy in my book, Jewish Supremacism. And he makes computer cases. What is he going to do? I mean, if you've got one company owned by a fellow Jew, maybe even goes to the same synagogue, another company, maybe even a cheaper priced computer case, maybe better quality. But again, he favors his fellow Jew, and that fellow Jew may be receiving a contract for who knows, 20 million computer cases. And that company there just goes through the roof in terms of the stock market. Then in terms of how about cohesion, how about communication, if they stick together, when they know things in advance, for instance. So these Jews that have these companies are in important positions, and they say they know this company is about ready to make a killing. They're privy, and somebody's got to be privy to the economic paperwork of the company before it's actually published, before it hits the public. Somebody's got to know it, and let's say that they have Jews involved. And the word gets out in the Jewish community, well, this company, XYZ company, is going to have a great third quarter. It's up 100% in sales, which will obviously tremendously impact the stock price. So the word gets out. The word spreads among the Jewish community. Hey Irv, hey Marv, XYZ company, it's a great buy right now. So somebody transfers $1 million worth of stock, sells $1 million, and puts the money into XYZ. And a couple weeks later, the fourth quarter or third quarter report comes out, 100% increase in sales, and the price may go from $10 a share to $15 a share. And so if they invest $1 million, they made $500,000 in a matter of days with very little risk. And again, the money comes from somewhere in society. It doesn't just come and materialize out of thin air. It comes out of the pockets of, by the way, people who work and produce and give things of value to a society. So that process that just goes on, I mean, and it goes on and on and on in a tremendous number of areas. If there's a Jewish individual in a certain part of government, all right, let's say he knows the government's going to build bases in a certain area, and the word goes out to his fellow brethren, well, the property values are going to go up because the government's building a new base there. And some of the brethren go in and buy up some of the property. In Russia, we had 11 oligarchs take over 65% of the nation's resources of Russia. You know, how did they do that? For one thing, there was whatever Jews and government shared information, they knew what companies were valuable. And then they networked in terms of this massive amount of capital that they could ship into Russia, which they needed to buy these companies or even to bribe to bribe whatever officials necessary so the sales would go to themselves. Khodorkovsky was convicted. This man basically extorted. He stole $300 billion of the Russian people's natural resources. It was owned by the government, in effect, by the Russian people, the oil resources of that country, the oil leases of the so-called Yukos company. And for a very tiny amount of money, but it was substantial. No Russians had that money, but the Jewish money from overseas, they know a good deal when they get it. They know it's a pretty damn good deal when they can spend, $10 million or $100 million and get $200 billion of value, and that's by the way, that's a lot of bribe money you have available there too, isn't it? But who else can come up with those funds? So it's a team effort. I talk about this in Jewish Supremacism in Spain, for instance, where and some of the trade was completely controlled by the Jewish supremacists. They literally controlled it. You just had to deal with them, and the Gentiles couldn't enter the trade. It was basically a controlled market completely. And no wonder Gentiles might get upset over some of these processes. It's this side of the question, obviously, that you just don't ever hear about, and that's why people have this mistaken understanding. This mistaken understanding of what's going on. Ernst and Dale's in prison because he simply had the courage to talk about things and to contest and challenge some of the Jews on certain issues and during the Second World War, on certain parts of the so-called Holocaust story. No one has ever denied, including Ernst and Dale, no one's ever denied that there weren't Jewish atrocities in the war. But there are some interesting challenges to some aspects of the so-called Holocaust story. Let me finish reading. He says, Friesendell now says, speaking of Ernst and Dell, is going to be a protest at the Wiesenthal Center on Friday noon. It should be good. On Friday, July 29, we'll be rallying at the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles to focus public attention on the center's record of lies in support of war, Zionist oppression, and Jewish supremacism. Particularly outrageous is the fact that each year this bigoted Israeli First outfit gets millions of dollars in taxpayers' funds. If you live in Southern California, we urge you to join us. We do urge you to join them, and you can go to againststormfront.org, and you can get out the message and get out the information about what's going on. Here's no taxpayer money for Wiesenthal Center, no to war, Zionist oppression and bigotry, rally for justice and peace, July 29. The same Wiesenthal Center, based in Los Angeles, is one of the world's most important Jewish organizations. It reports an annual income of $27 million, including $10 million in taxpayer funds. Over the years, it's even received millions of dollars from California state funds that have been set aside for schools. Although it claims to promote tolerance, its real agenda is a narrowly Jewish Zionist one. The Wiesenthal Center is a staunch supporter of Israel and fervently supports its policies of oppression, occupation, institutionalized discrimination against non-Jews. We're rallying at the Seaman Wiesenthal Center on July 29, 2005 to highlight its record of deceit and lies in support of war, Zionist oppression, and Jewish supremacism, and to protest the giveaway of millions of dollars of public funds to this bastion of Jewish Zionist power. Join us Friday, July 29 at noon outside the offices of the Seaman Wiesenthal Center, 1399 South Roxbury Drive, Los Angeles, California, 90035. This is at the corner of Pico Boulevard, diagonally opposite, quote, the Museum of Tolerance. So you can read more about that if you'd like on stormfront.org, the town hall section. This is from Kevro. Mr. Duke, it's been a September 11th research. I've been a September 11th researcher for the past week. I have to say that the theory that the government was involved in 9/11 is convincing. The theory asks a lot of good questions and finds holes in the government story. Have you been researching 9/11 as well? What are your comments? Kevin. This is going to be too long, and we're already way over time with this broadcast, but I'll tell you, Kevro, do I believe that the United States government, I mean, actively George Bush and the rest of these people planned 9/11 or knew about 9/11 or committed 9/11? No, I don't. I certainly believe that there are Zionists, maybe a certain position or power in the government, who knew about it ahead of time. And I do not put it past the Zionists for planning this. And I know that Al-Qaeda and all the Arabic so-called terrorist organizations are infiltrated. I don't put it past the Zionists infiltrating them and directing them toward this project. But I don't really believe in this huge government conspiracy. I think you'd have to have hundreds of people involved. I think there are many, many Americans involved who would have to have been involved in this whole process that would absolutely realize the horror of what they're doing and try to do something to stop it, get the information out there, make a warning or whatever. It's just too possible that anytime conspiracies are possible, my friends, but anytime you have huge numbers of people involved in a super secret conspiracy, as this would have to be, there's just too much danger of that material getting out. So I don't think, and I've read a lot of the accounts, and I really think it's basically a waste of time. I really believe it's a waste of time dealing with whether or not the government was involved in setting this up. Here's the facts of the matter, as the world understands. You know, hijackers, hijacked airplanes and crashed them into buildings in the United States of America, causing a great loss of life and property. The real issue is, why was this done? And any reasonable person would understand, if the hijackers were who the government says that they were, and I think that there's a lot of evidence that they were who they say they were, and I do believe the planes really were hijacked, and I do believe these people really did die. You can go talk to their families. There were people waiting at the airport for them to land. I don't think that these planes were crashed in the middle of the Atlantic and then other planes were sent to the towers. I mean, you can go into all sorts of weird theories. But the issue is that these attacks took place because of the American support of Israel's policies in the Middle East and Israel's agenda, including what's happened in Iraq over the last few years, what's happened in the Middle East, what's happened to the Palestinians. That's engendered a great hatred. And this was never talked about. It was always said that the reason why they attacked was because they simply hated American freedom. Not true. The truth is, we were attacked because we're not free, because American media and government is controlled by the Jewish supremacists who've put us into a collision course with a great deal of the world and engendered great hatred against us. Now, do I believe the Israelis knew about this attack ahead of time, that there was some knowledge among Israeli intelligence forces? Yes. Fox News Network, in fact, mentioned that, and I believe absolutely it is a fact. I think the evidence is overwhelming. We did catch Israeli Mossad agents inexplicably filming and celebrating the attacks as they occurred. We do know that the Israeli intelligence Mossad had agents shadowing Mohammed Atta, the supposed hijacked leader, and the entire team. We know that for a fact. We even have the names of the men who lived in the same street as Mohammed Atta. We know that an Israeli firm got warning messages just prior to the attack. There's no question about that, no argument about it. It does exist. And we know that there was a very impossibly low Israeli death toll at the World Trade Center, Israeli citizen death toll at the Trade Center. It's funny. I read some report refuting that, and they said, well, the Israeli death toll was about the same percentage as the number of Israeli citizens in New York. Well, let me tell you something. The World Trade Center, the Center of Trade and Finance, is full of dual nationals. I'm telling you that this is the field where Jews and Jewish supremacists and Jewish internationalists are well overrepresented in terms of the population. And the death toll of zero is almost impossible. Now, they say that three were, but I have not been able to confirm any of that. And the New York Times and other sources say that there weren't any Jewish casualties at the Trade Center. There were two Jews that died, one in each of the airplanes that were hijacked, but none that actually died in the Trade Center itself. So those are some things which I think we can understand. The rest of it, I think it really gets us off the subject. I think we've got to talk about the issue of Jewish supremacism, its control over our media, how this whole event has been treated. We've got to talk about how the Israeli Mossad probably knew about this attack ahead of time. And we've got to talk about even a more fundamental question. The most important question of all is, how in the world could America have a policy for so many years that's so damaging to the United States, that now has made literally hundreds of millions of people want to kill us, and has created tens of thousands of terrorists and potential suicide bombers that would like to strike against Americans anywhere in the world? There is a cause and effect to all this, ladies and gentlemen. The terrorism in New York was horrendous and horrible, and I would like to see punished to the full maximum of the law anyone that we caught involved in that terrorism. But I don't believe in a massive government conspiracy. I do believe in a absolute treacherous action by the Israeli government, in that when they knew that these attacks would take place, they purposely did not warn the American people, did not give proper warnings to the American intelligence agencies, and in fact did give some warnings to Israeli nationals. We lost connection for a little while, but ladies and gentlemen, I hope to have this program archived very, very quickly, and from the archives you'll be able to hear and listen to the show at length without any interruptions. Apparently we had some interruption in terms of our cable service here. We had some bad thunderstorms in this area of Louisiana. Until tomorrow, I just tell you God bless and take care. Thanks so much. This has been David Duke for our heritage and our freedom.